Welcome to the Bank Marketing Show, the podcast that engages and informs you for success in today's marketplace. It's the show that will make you a better marketer with trends, tactics, and inspiration from experts and industry leaders. If you're wanting to impact your personal success and position your bank as the best choice in your market, you're in the right place. Now let's dive into today's show with your hosts, Chris and Dan.
All right, welcome everybody to another episode of the Bank Marketing Show. I'm Dan DeVallis, and we're here with Chris Bates and our guest today, John McNair, who's President and CEO of the Community Bankers Association of Georgia. I'm really excited to have this conversation and get into some of the issues facing community banks in Georgia and beyond. So welcome, Chris and John.
Great. Thank you for having me.
Yeah. Thanks, Dan. I'm excited about this one too. This one John, we've been talking about the value and the insight that you have, from a big picture perspective. So this is going to be a great one for our listeners today. So thanks for joining us.
Thank you guys. I appreciate the opportunity.
Absolutely. So I wanted to give everybody a little bit of an intro of you and just kind of your background and bio a little bit. And so I didn't realize that you had joined CBA of Georgia, looks like in October of 18. So had been around otherwise and had been with ICBA and been at Community Bankers for 14 years prior to that. So that's really cool background thing as you and I have met each other. I wasn't even aware of that. But John, looks like you were also personally engaged with Community Bankers throughout the Northeast region, kind of your home stomping ground, and have been in your career path all about helping community banks, business, educational services, certainly advocacy, all those things that the association is about, but that, you know, are a big part of your background. I know from hearing you and knowing you as well, that grassroots advocacy and advocacy through your membership is a big deal to you as well, and has been a part of your career path too. So really cool to see that. You graduated from University of Delaware with economics, and then a master's from Wilmington University. I didn't realize that. So
many, many years ago.
Yeah. It was just a couple of years ago.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I didn't have all the gray hair back then.
Maybe working with bankers is giving you the gray hair.
Well, that too.
Absolutely. So, and years prior, you and your wife, Lisa, owned a small business that served community banks and their customers. And John, you have served on Board of Regents with the Paul W. Barrett School of Banking. Gosh, you guys have been married 30 years. And Lisa holds a BS in accounting and an MBA as well, and a CPA. So you guys are all about the business environment. Your daughter Lauren is a graduate of University of Georgia. So there's UGA is a. I knew you guys were Bulldogs.
Yeah.
So, but man, we're really great to have you. And I wanted to give a little bit of a backdrop as well, that my agency and CBA of Georgia, besides us being preferred service providers and having been CBA of Georgia members for I don't know how long. I actually asked a couple of your team members and they couldn't remember either, but it's well above a decade. So we do know that. But my team at the agency also gets to work with you guys on some of your email marketing and design work and all that. So besides our work with community bank clients, it's really cool to have the kind of relationship that we do with you guys as an association as well. So John, so excited about having you.
Great. Well, we appreciate the good support that you all provide. You do our weekly newsletter, you do our bi-monthly magazine, and you help us with a number of graphics, things that we do from time to time. So we appreciate the good service that you and your people provide CBA and our member banks.
Absolutely. So, and we have to give a present year shout out too, John, that it's so nice to be able to get together in person.
Oh my God.
For your conferences and all of that too. I know, Dan, you've been back to conferences in person too with banking associations this year. So thank goodness, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I'm a introvert at heart, always sort of fighting against that. And so part of my soul was like, ooh, I get an excuse to stay home, but it's so nice to, now that I'm getting back out, it's, yeah, it's nothing replaces the in-person meeting.
Yeah. We're about 12 weeks out from our convention, which is our premier event. We'll be at the Ritz-Carlton in Amelia Island, September 14th through 17th. And we're about 70 registrations ahead of where we were this time last year. So and we had a good attendance last year. So I think that speaks to the desire, the pent-up demand, the desire for people to get out and experience things and, you know, frankly, engage with each other once again. So
no doubt. We know that every industry is happy to be doing that. So, Well, John, it occurs to me as I kind of looked through your bio and was going through that, you've got an extensive background in and related to this industry. So what kind of made you get into this industry? Why the interest and then bringing that forward?
Well, I needed a job right out of college. So my mom and dad were lower to middle income people. I was the first person to go to college in my family on my mother's side or my father's side for that matter. And so when I graduated from University of Delaware, they had a fantastic career center. I left my resume with a lot of different companies, mostly for business oriented positions. And you know, with the economics background, I certainly had a interest in business and economics, and still very much do to this day. I'm sort of a bookworm when it comes to any economic report data that is published. I read multiple publications a day just to feel like I'm staying in touch. But got a phone call from the John Hartland Company. Interestingly enough, headquartered out of Atlanta at the time. They're now more of a, there's still a, you know, historically back in the day, they were a check printing company. Well, needless to say, check usage is on the decline. And Harland, as well as Deluxe, which are the two major check printing companies in the country, have transitioned to be more technology-based companies today. So Harland is now called Veracast. And so they called me, had an opportunity for a sales associate position in Westchester, Pennsylvania. I was living in Wilmington, Delaware at the time. So it was very close. And that's how I got started, working for Harland, calling on mostly community banks, trying to get them to use our check printing services. And that's kind of how the ball got rolling. It just kept going from there.
So you went from there to, did you go from there to the ICBA?
No, actually, I had a little bit of a long tail there. Up in the King of Prussia area, there was a company called Safeguard Business Systems, which is, back in the day, they were headquartered actually out of Fort Washington, that King of Prussia area, if you will. So I had an opportunity to go to work for Safeguard as a regional manager. And Safeguard sold their products and services through an independent distributor network. And most of those independent distributors worked with small banks and CPA firms. So, for example, in your businesses, you buy invoices and checks and statements, et cetera. Sometimes you go to your bank for those things. Sometimes you buy them directly. Safeguard was a provider of those services. And again, they sold their products through independent distributors. So my job was to sort of serve as a business consultant to the independent distributors to help them grow their businesses and expand their footprint in their respective markets. Well, part of my job also was to kind of enforce performance contracts. They all had certain performance metrics, as we all do in our lives, to hit. And one of my distributorships that wasn't quite performing well, the gentleman was close to retirement age, was out of Harrisburg, Pennsylvania. So we went to dinner one night, had a conversation, and we talked about perhaps me acquiring his business. And so my wife and I took on the challenge. We acquired his business and became independent distributors for Safeguard Business Systems in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania for 5.5-6 years. And so that was sort of the next iteration after Harland. And then quickly from there, we then got an offer. We really rebuilt that business that wasn't performing well by working with community banks that had small business customers that were coming into their offices saying, hey, I have QuickBooks software, I have Mass 90, I have real world software. Okay, I want to order checks and statements for those things. Unfortunately, a lot of the people working in the banks didn't really have the technical expertise to match up the products appropriately with the software requirements. So we went in and built relationships with a lot of the banks and say, look, why don't you, instead of fumbling through the book yourself and trying to figure it out and getting it wrong half the times, why don't you contract with us? We'll actually go to the customer's office and help them find the product that they actually need, and we'll work with their software. So many of the area banks said, okay, that sounds like a great thing. And they were more interested in having their customer get served well and taken care of than they were anything else, which is what community banking is all about. And so we really grew the business by developing a network of community bank referral sources. And so we then had an offer to sell that business after 5.5-6 years. And then actually I went into the commercial appraisal world, working for a firm in Harrisburg that I'm a lifelong golfer. And this particular firm actually specialized in doing golf course real estate evaluation work. So a bank would order an appraisal or want to do have a feasibility study done on the viability of a potential project, they would call us to do that work. So I actually was becoming an appraiser and a golf course real estate consultant at the time as well, which is really cool. I cannot walk onto a golf course any time now without looking at a golf course and say, boy, I wonder what they're spending on that bunker. They've got some deferred maintenance over here. Wow, you know, this is really done well. And I'm poisoned now. I can't really enjoy the golf experience without looking at it analytically.
I bet.
Yeah. But then after that, I did go to work for ICBA. That was 2004, which is a lifetime ago. So I was there for 14 years before I got the call to come to Georgia.
So joining CBA Georgia is kind of what brought you further south.
Yes. It's kind of a really long story here. When my father's family came over from Scotland, they settled in Colquitt County, in Moultrie. So my ancestry is that of coming from Georgia. Huh. So, but we were living in the north, and my daughter, when it was time for her to go to school, she didn't want to stay in the north anymore because the winters are kind of tough. I mean, mm-hmm. if you think y'all have tough winters down here at 35, 40 degrees, come up to Pennsylvania, we'll show you some tough winters. So she wanted to come to school in the South, got into Georgia. And then when she graduated, she got a job with Ernst & Young right away. And it's just serendipity. I got a phone call for the job here. And we said, we want to get down South anyway. We prefer warm weather too. And so it just kind of the stars aligned there. We were very blessed.
There you go. Well, through all of that career path and experience, and certainly your years since 2018 with CBA of Georgia, no doubt you get to keep the pulse on the industry, John. So now we have been through, not that it's totally finished, but we've been through pandemic years, rates are going up, fintechs are, you know, lots of stuff we'll discuss a little further in a little bit, but give us your perspective of kind of literally taking the pulse of the environment for the industry that we're all in today.
Yeah, I think people need to understand that banks are, community banks in particular, they're just small businesses themselves. I mean, the product that they sell is money. And in order to sell that product, they have to bring in money to sell money. And it's like if you're building a widget, you need raw materials and you need laborers to manufacture the widget, then you need a distribution channel to sell the widget. Banking's no different. I mean, so these are just, especially the community banks that we serve, they are just regular small businesses. So a lot of the challenges that, you know, you all are facing in your business, I'm facing as a CEO of an association, the local pizza shop owner is dealing with, community banks are dealing with the same challenges. You know, inflation is a real problem, 8-10% plus inflation. Many economists will argue that we're in a recession now. So, that, you know, that's obviously problematic. Labor, you know, we're at you know, pretty much statistically full employment. So trying to find labor at an attractive price point for any business right now is a massive challenge. I mean, that's probably the number one issue I hear from any bank that I visit is, you know, we can't find staff. We can't find staff. So real problem. You know, and again, the cost of that labor is going through the roof as well. So it's not only attracting new labor, but retaining the staff that you have now and being competitive from a from a wage and overall compensation standpoint. You know, now you have this interest rate environment, right? Which, you know, everything that you'll read and hear, and there's a lot of truth to it, that a rising rate environment is good for banks in general. You know, why is that? Well, most banks, especially community banks, have time deposits on their balance sheet. They have 6-12 month CDs. And, you know, a lot of those are set right now at maybe a quarter point, a half a point. And so now you've had a couple rate increases. And so that money is still getting, you're still paying a quarter point or half a point on those deposits. But a lot of banks have adjustable rate loans on their balance sheet as well. And so those loan rates reset at higher rates. So you effectively increase your spread. Well, that holds true in most normal times, except when you have 8-10% inflation. And so it's all that nice additional spread, well, not all of it, is getting eaten up in the cost of doing business. And so what you see is an environment in which, for the first quarter in Georgia, statistics that we haven't seen for a very long period of time, you have net interest margin, and I'm talking about community banks of $10 billion in assets and under, net interest margin for that segment of the industry is at a five-year low. Non-interest income, which is in our banks are not, community banks are not big generators of fee income, which is non-interest income, is at a five-year low. And then you have the efficiency ratio, which is simply the cost of how much it costs a bank to make a dollar, is at a five-year high. So those are not a good combination of numbers to have. So there's real challenges and headwinds that banks are facing right now. So and then obviously, why is the Fed increasing interest rates? Well, they're trying to taper down inflation. They're slowing demand. So when you slow demand, you have fewer small businesses coming to your bank to borrow money because fewer people, you know, the cost of money is increasing. The cost of expansion, the cost of doing new things is increasing therefore. So it's an interesting time period. We haven't seen times like this in a very long period of time. We've had a historically low interest rate environment for many, many years, and the Fed is ratcheting things up very quickly. Some, including myself, feel too quickly. Others, and more importantly, I don't matter in this discussion, but the Federal Reserve presidents, in particular, Cleveland, San Francisco, New York, all just came out yesterday and said, hey, we support another 75 point basis increase, and some were even calling for more. So you're going to see that continue for the months and maybe years ahead.
Taking that to the marketing conversation, I know, you know, my conversations with our clients have shifted from just in the last 6 months of, hey, we're super flush with cash, we need to go out and get loans, to, oh, no, we don't. Like, you know, let's shift to cross-seller. Let's shift to getting more out of our current customer base. How does it, are you seeing something similar in Georgia? How is all that kind of macro stuff affecting?
Well, that's a great point, because actually banks are still fairly flush with deposits, right? I mean, we were the flight to safety. Right. And a lot of people have left that money in the bank. So there is a redeployment opportunity for banks to take those low cost funds and redeploy them in other investments. And so they can recapture some of the losses that they're not going to realize. What, you know, rates go up, bond prices go down. So everyone's bond portfolio is kind of underwater. So yes, they are still flush with deposits, and there are some redeployment opportunities that are available. But I think the concern remains with regard to the inflationary pressures. I mean, everything, and again, I just want to keep emphasizing, these are small businesses. I mean, most of them are 150 to 250 million in assets, 35 to 75 employees. You know, these are small businesses. And so when you have that inflationary pressure on your normal costs, and that's why you see the efficiency ratio has been trending downward. And I know we'll talk about technology, because community banks have been embracing more fintech-oriented products to improve their overall back office operations and to enhance the customer delivery experience. But, you know, so the efficiency ratio has been trending downward. Now it's taken upwards, and that's all inflationary-based, in my opinion. So there are challenges ahead for sure.
Yeah, John, I definitely want us to be able to spend some time today talking more about association stuff and shared best practices and all, but now all three of us have mentioned technology. So let's go there for a second. And tell us, you know, what is it that you're seeing, benefits, challenges, barriers to entry, all of those things in the fintech, the use of technology, all of that with your bank members, John?
Well, they know they need to embrace it, right? And they know they need to invest in it, right? Well, there's a cost of investment. So a lot of folks have difficulty getting their arms around what is the ROI, what is the return on that investment when we buy a new application or begin to utilize an application that we had already purchased as part of our core processor package. So, but with that being said, I think there is in addition to that, there is a little bit of a fear factor of technology. How do we use it? How do we deploy it? This is not what we've always done, right? Mm-hmm. Internally here, we call it Sally, same as last year, right? This is, you know, using a new piece of technology. It's not what we've always done around here. So there is a fear factor there. But I think there is a realization that they need to embrace the various technology options that are out there. And it's really started when the corporate tax rate when did the corporate tax rate drop? I think it was 2018, 2009. Hmm. No, it was 16 or 17. I think the corporate tax rate went from 35 to 21. Okay, during that time period, I started to see banks revisit their core processors and actually make core processor changes like I've never seen before in my entire career. It's because they took additional relief, that tax relief, and invested it in their business. And that still is continuing. Probably one of our busiest partner firms outside of y'all is our core processing consulting partner. His phone is ringing off the hook, you know, every week with banks that are looking to evaluate their core processor because they know that they need to modernize their back office, their technology, and again, provide the customer the delivery experience that the customer wants. You know, everybody wants to be able to do everything they can possibly do on their phone. Banks, community banks, big banks, credit unions, they all need to be able to provide those tools so the customer has what they want. It's like anything else. It's a customer driven business.
John, I did just jot down Sally. I've never heard that. I don't know how, and I can tell you that same as last year comment and discussion that Dan and I battle that all the time as we're having strategic marketing planning discussions with our clients and all that kind of stuff. And you know, it's one of those things that just kind of makes us, I'm speaking for both of us, Dan, but it kind of makes me go, oh, geez, what? Same as last year is not this year. It is not forward thinking. It is not this. And from a budgeting perspective, from a marketing messaging standpoint, all of the things that the kind of the world that we swim in all day, every day. So I jotted Sally down and I got to tell you, I don't like Sally. So.
Well, you know, it's human nature, right? It's like, hey, I'm comfortable, right? I'm comfortable. Yeah. But the second you're comfortable, that's the second your competitors passing you by. So a friend of mine who's a pilot, he used to say, John, you got to stay ahead of the airplane, right? If you're flying, if you're at where the airplane is now, then you're going to have a problem. You got to stay ahead of the airplane. When I was a teenager growing up, my father taught me to drive. He said, you got to look 2 to 3 cars ahead of you all the time, not just the car in front, 2 to 3 cars. And you apply that to business. It's no longer, you know, hey, you can't just think 6 weeks out. You got to think 6 months out and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So
it's an interesting, I mean, the technology environment, I mean, technology in general, not just bank tech, but everywhere, just the rate of progress accelerates every year. And that's especially true in banking. So, you know, it's even same as last year is one thing, but every year that means more and more advancement. And if you're several years into, that's how we did it last year, like you're getting just further and further behind, and especially coming out of the pandemic. You know, I know right at the beginning of the pandemic, a lot of banks sort of stepped back and said, hold on, we're going to hold off on new investments or new processes until we see how this plays out. And that makes a lot of sense. But now we're, you know, on the other end of it. And so there's some, you know, there's some banks sort of starting to accelerate and some still kind of waiting to see kind of what happens, especially with the inflation you're talking about. I mean, what are you seeing in Georgia in terms of, you know, banks kind of opening back up, starting to make more investments?
Yeah, loan demand is a little tepid right now across the board. And again, I think that's the inflationary pressures. People are slowing down a little bit in terms of their need for to buy money, which again, banks sell money. So, you know, I think our bankers go into hunker down mode like no other industry I've ever seen, and they're not quite there yet. But I'm starting to hear things like, well, we got to be a little more cautious this year. We have to be a little bit. And so when you hear those buzzwords, being around this industry as long as I have been, it's like, okay, you know that they're starting to get into slowdown mode a little bit as well. So, you know, and that's a change from where things have been the last several years. I mean, everything's been, you know, there's been strong loan demand. You know, here's the other thing too, is that there's a lot of rhetoric coming out of the agencies in DC about increased regulation. Well, regulation is a direct cost of doing business. And that's a, you know, you're talking about, you know, if you remember, was it 6 months ago, 7 months ago, we were talking about every bank in the country having to provide the IRS with reporting on transactions of $600 or more. So, you know, when you make a car payment, they'd have to report it and things, you know, mortgage payment, they'd have to report it. Well, we lobby very strongly against that, as did every other trade association across industries in the country for a whole bunch of reasons. I mean, our reasoning was invasion of privacy, but also cost of, you know, the cost of compliance. I mean, that would literally put banks out of business if they had a cost, if they had to keep up with the cost to comply with that. So, but there is a lot of talk out of Washington in terms of increasing the regulatory burden on banks. And so they're hearing that. They're seeing a little bit of tepid interest in a loan portfolio or in loan demand. And they're pulling back a little bit, which is understandable.
John, you've mentioned several things about change, and you've also mentioned the resourcefulness of your team to your members in various ways and all that. And that's so true. So let's talk a little bit about the role of the association, and in particular, as things are changing, whether it's tech or rates or whatever the case may be and focus areas. Some of the benefits that you see of the shared best practices and the networking among your membership.
Yeah, you know, our job at the association is I used the phrase "stay ahead of the airplane." That's our job. And so when I'm out talking to bankers, I'm listening. What are your pain points? What are your challenges? What are your problems? Well, we have HR issues, cybersecurity issues. We're scared to death of this. How much should we invest in it? Innovation, technology. The bond portfolio. How do we manage the bond portfolio in this environment? And so it's our job to take that information and then come up with resources, programs, products, and services, as well as education curriculum to help them deal with the problems that they're dealing with today and then deal with the problems that are coming down the pike, you know, 6-12 months down the road from now. So that's our challenge. Like our, you know, the education curriculum is evolving a lot faster. You know, you could pretty much just do a BSA AML class or a branch leadership class, right? And just say, you know, the fundamentals of commercial lending, right? Those were sort of, I don't want to say stagnant programs, but they're fairly consistent, maybe with a few tweaks if there's a minor regulatory change here and there. Well, those days are gone. Right. I mean, the needs, the issues, the problems are changing so rapidly. It puts us in a very difficult position to make sure that we're addressing it real time, but also addressing what's coming down the pike 6-12 months down the road from now with regard to the resources we bring to the table and the education. So we've managed to do a pretty good job of that. We're always trying to do better. But if you look at our convention curriculum this year, it's probably one of the best and most comprehensive I've ever seen. We have a branding segment there. You know, Chris, you've spoken at our convention before in the past. Yeah. As you guys know, as bank marketers, our banks need to do a much better job in their branding and marketing. And you guys provide such valuable resources and services in those areas. But technology, innovation, banking as a service, that's a new term within the last year, year and a half that is being kicked around more and more by some of your moderate size to larger institutions looking at how to get into that business, HR-related issues. Again, the bond portfolio. So if you look at our convention agenda, we're trying to cover all those areas. And again, bring in the best speakers we can with the most relevant and current information possible. So not only doing it at convention, but doing it all year long in the various programs that we offer. So Christy Greer, our Senior Vice President of Professional Development, is a 20-year community banker herself. So she's lived a lot of this and does a great job managing our curriculum for us.
John, I was over there doing a part of, and my agency sponsored one of your leadership workshops back a couple of months ago, and met Christy and Lindsay and the team over there. And while I was over there, I kind of made some rounds around Georgia and visited several of our clients in the area. And so I found myself in meeting with one client in literally a two stoplight town in South Georgia, and then was up in the North Atlanta, Johns Creek area. Yeah. And, you know, both great clients of ours, drastically different relationship conversations, you know, all of that. So Dan and I were talking about this in the lead up to this show with you. You've got urban Atlanta, mm-hmm. and even Macon and some other, you know, good size areas. And obviously Atlanta's a monstrosity. And then you've got little bitty towns all over, and your membership spans that. And but before jumping into this question, what's the van you drive? There's a name for it.
That's it. Well, we've called it the Swaggin Wagon.
The Swaggin Wagon. That's it. So I know you spend a lot of butt in the seat windshield time with that. And that was kind of what was leading to this question is you've got members, you know, that are under 100 million, and you've got multi-billion dollar members and all of the above. So you know, what are the differences in the approaches there that you see and even the viability?
Yeah, you know, that's a great question. Right? I mean, obviously, you know, your more rural markets, they're agricultural lender institutions, right? So when we do training for them, we're bringing in ag economists. We're bringing in people to talk about the ag industry across the, you know, how's the impact of diesel fuel going to have, you know, what's the impact of the increase of diesel fuel going to have on, you know, the product that the farmer is producing, the cost that they have to sell that for, their cost of doing business, how's that going to impact your asset, right? Being the loan. And so it is very, very different. And I think that's a challenge in our industry, especially for Washington to understand, is that, you know, when you hear about a new regulation or a piece of legislation that folks are working on, it's oftentimes painted with one big brush. Well, the banking industry doesn't work like that. The banking industry is extremely diverse. You know, even within Georgia, you cannot talk about, people say, well, talk to me about the state of the Georgia banking environment. It's like, well, what part of Georgia do you want to talk about? Because coastal Georgia is different than northeast Georgia. And Northeast Georgia is different than the Atlanta metro area, and so forth and so on. So the challenges are diverse. You know, I will say this. I mean, a big concern that I have is that Georgia is blessed from the standpoint that we've had 5 banks start up in the last 3 years. 4 of them have been in the metro Atlanta market, and only 1 has been in the rural in rural Georgia, which is actually the hometown, the town where my father's family, when I said they came over from Scotland, we have a new bank called Moultrie Bank and Trust in Moultrie, Georgia, right? We need more banks in our rural and minority communities. And you know, a banker that I visited with just last week had this great quote. He's very concerned about the consolidation. He's very concerned about the pressures that rural banks are having in particular. He's like, look, if you don't have a community bank, you don't have a community. And it's very true. You can go to towns in which, you know, you could just, I call it a spiral effect. You know, if you have a community bank, the economy spirals upward in a positive way. If you lose a bank, the local economy spirals downward because you don't have local sources of credit, right? And the challenges for our rural banks, you know, it's tough. A lot of them are family-owned banks. Succession planning is really, really hard for them. That's a contrast to the metro area banks. And then, you know, finding talent to come into some of these more rural areas is very challenging for these folks as well. So, you know, that's probably one of the top challenges our rural institutions have is bringing talent in that is versed in the new technology and in the innovation mindset. So that's why I think you see a decline of banks in our rural in minority communities, which is a real problem. We're working on things with the we've spoken to the Kemp administration a fair amount last year about trying to pass legislation, maybe change some regulations here to make it easier and more attractive for capital to come into existing rural banks and even start up new rural banks. So we're working on some things from a legislative standpoint. So we hope we are successful in that endeavor. But yeah, very, very different asset size, very different asset categories, very different portfolio sizes, et cetera, as well. So you can't paint them all with one brush.
Do you think, it's different challenges. You know, I know urban banks, you know, there's usually a bit more competition, but there's also a lot more, you know, population to draw from. Do you find one group is kind of struggling more than the other with the inflationary pressure and rising rates?
The metro area banks versus the rural banks.
Yeah, I'm just curious how it's affecting them.
I think there's more pressure on the rural banks. I really do. I mean, because they don't. Your urban area banks can do more small business lending. There's just more small businesses the pool is just a lot. It's a bigger pool, if you will, of customer. Customer possibilities. A lot of our metro area banks do a lot of SBA lending, right? And actually our industry in general, being the community banking sector, was very active in the PPP process, which is basically small, you know, SBA lending. So your metro area banks are bigger generators of SBA loans. And there's a different fee structure associated with that. The guarantee portions are very liquid on the secondary market, and that's all non-interest income. So they can sell those, they can sell the guarantee portions, book it right away and earn some good non-interest income immediately and still have an earning asset, a portion of an earning asset on your balance sheet. The rural banks don't necessarily have that opportunity. So I think the pressures are more on your rural and minority-based banks than your metro area banks for sure.
Interesting.
Yeah. So Dan, not to let John totally off on that, you got to see the Snagging Wagon and at their... At their conferences, it's an ever-present graphic that just, John, it seems to show up all kinds of places. But what I love about that is it's obviously representative of your connectivity. You meaning CBA of Georgia and your connectivity with your membership and your presence. And I know, kind of like we began this discussion, that it's so great to be in person with conferences and those types of things. You know, how great is it to actually be able to go out and be among your membership, so to speak, and the lobbies are open and things are happening and you know, people are coming in and out, although lobby traffic may be down. You know, there's certainly some sense of normality there, too, that I think is forward feeling. So
agree. Yeah, it's a nice wave to help me tell the story and have some fun with it.
Yeah,
you know, so I love getting a picture of the wagon with the logos that we have on it in front of a bank sign and say, hey, I was in, you know, southeastern Georgia today visiting these great community banks. You know, on our website, you can find every community bank member of the state. You know, if you're looking for a community bank in southeastern Georgia, log on to cbafga.com. And that's really grown. I mean, it, you know, from a branding standpoint, our social media statistics are through the roof and continue to grow. And, you know, it's very intentional, but it helps us, again, tell the story of community banking.
Mm-hmm. Well, good thoughts to transition with here, John. As you know, in preparing for this show today, one of the things that we like to do is have a closing round here and learn a little bit more about you, your interest, your some insight into your life. So we call this our lightning round. So are you ready for some lightning round questions?
Let's give it a go.
You got it. Well, so our first one is, can you give us a maybe a personal best and a business best?
You know, I think from a personal standpoint, just having a healthy, happy family, we've talked about our kids. It's nice when you see your child, your children get on their way in life and find their path. My daughter's 26 and she's has a nice job. She's a nice young man in her life. And so it's just nice to see your children find their path and, have a good relationship with your spouse. We will be married 33 years in September, so time flies. I think I've given her more gray hair than she's given me. But, having a happy, successful family, I think that's number one. And from a business standpoint, I'm really proud of what's been done here at CBA. You know, Chris, you've been with us for a long time. When I took over the association, we had some challenges. We weren't doing some of the things that we're doing today. We weren't on very good financial footing and just really helping be a part of the process to turn CBA around, having rallying my board of directors, the membership, partner firms to get behind what we were trying to do and support the association. So, instead of losing money every year, we're making a little bit of money. Instead of not having any resources to do government relations work, we've actually added resources. And so I'm proud of what's been done here over the past almost 4 years by the team, by the leadership bankers, and really with the help of our preferred partners like yourself and so many others.
Those are great ones. So do you have a favorite book or resource that comes to mind?
I have a lot of favorite books. The one that is on my credenza right now that I keep turning to, I've done martial arts for 16 years, and I'm a martial arts instructor. And there's a book called Zen in the Martial Arts by Joe Hymans. It's an older book, but it's a lot of short, quick stories that are taking lessons of the arts and applying to different aspects of your life, whether it's your activity endeavors, your business endeavors, your personal endeavors. So just taking principles of the martial arts and applying those across the board. And so it's a kind of a little self-help book, if you will. So when you're kind of, having some struggles, I know, it's dog eared now. So I kind of know where to turn for the particular lessons. So that's one it's sitting on my credenza right now that, 10 minutes before I fall asleep, I'll pick up something and pick it up at a certain page and read a little bit and just kind of hit the refresh button.
That sounds like one that anybody could have some great takeaways from.
It really is. It's not just for martial artists. Now, he uses some terminology, but broadly speaking, they're just great life lessons. I mean, that to me, I think it's a life lesson book.
Very cool. Mm-hmm. So this is always a fun question. What comes to mind for you with the most impactful piece of advice you feel like you've gotten?
Yeah, so growing up, I used to work in the local golf shop. And, what was told to me by actually several people throughout my life, but one of the fellas that worked there, and I had just started, and he's like, Johnny, if you want to do well here at the pro shop, you'll do the jobs that no one else wants to do. And I think that was a great lesson. Now, the reason why he was telling me that, because the worst job in the pro shop was sweeping out the cart barn. So this is a very dusty, nasty cart barn. And it would be July and August. And even up in the north, we had a lot, 98 degrees, 90% humidity. So I would go down and sweep out the cart barn, come back just covered in dust, sweat, but I was doing the job that no one else wanted to do. And I thought that that was good advice. So people respect the person that'll step in, roll up their sleeves and say, okay, you know, I'll do it. If no one else is going to do it, I'll do it. And I think that's been a lesson that served me well.
I love that. I think it's always the least fun jobs that often like contribute the most to a business or, you know, customer happiness.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And frankly, I've learned that from our bankers too. I remember visiting a banker in Ohio one year and I had a 9 o'clock appointment and I'm there at 8:55 and they let me in and there was a fella outside shoveling snow from the crosswalk and said, hey, how you doing? I've not met the CEO before. And hey, how you doing? Next thing you know, I'm in the CEO's office. 5 minutes later, the guy comes in, he's stomping off his boots. It was the CEO shoveling the front walk. So, you know, those are community bankers. That's what they do. I mean, that's who they are. So I've kind of learned that lesson over and over again from the bankers that we serve. That's just who they are.
Well, cool. Dan, you always like to take that best advice gotten question and flip it around. So John, what is the advice you like to give to your team?
You know, it's we all have goals and objectives, right? In internally, you know, and being in business development most of my life, I always had a number on my head, whether it was a quarterly number or a yearly number. Never think about your number, right? Always think about what's good for the customer. Put the customer's needs first. Put the member's needs first, right? So, you know, don't. It is so cliche, but don't put square pegs in round holes. You know, if I was trying to talk to somebody about a product or service that I was offering, if you realize that that product or service is not going to be a fit for that banker, or that customer, don't try to sell it. Right? It's like if you walk into a car dealership and all you want to do is buy a four-door sedan, and the salesperson wants to sell you this tricked-out SUV, you have to be really happy with that. So understand what your member needs, what your customer needs. And think in terms of what's important to them. You know, always think in terms of what's important to the other person versus how do I win? You know, they need to win first. If they win, I will win. And that's kind of the mindset we have here. And that's just a mindset that has served me well also. And I've seen people that have kind of gone the other way. It's like, it's all about getting their number. And, you know, invariably, I'd always be a top performer anyway. So even the people that were trying to running towards their numbers and get their thing done, they were oftentimes the people that never succeeded. So
a lot of wisdom in that. Great thoughts.
That's where all the gray hair comes from. So
I told you that's the wisdom tying in.
Yep.
Well, this has really been great, John, from our listenership audience. Some folks might love to be able to reach out to you if you don't mind and be able to, communicate, ask questions, bounce things off of you, get more of that gray-haired wisdom. So what are kind of the best ways for folks to get in touch with you?
Yeah, I'm pretty active on LinkedIn, Chris, as you know. I mean, just follow the Swaggin' Wagon or, follow us at cbaofga.com. You know, we're on Facebook, we're on LinkedIn. We're very active from an organizational standpoint on social, and then my contact information is on the website as well. So please feel free to reach out directly. And I'm always looking to make friends. So
yeah, we'll link all that up in the show notes so people will have it.
Great.
John, we can't thank you enough for sharing your insights and your thoughts and your own pathways and career path and all that with us, and some great insights into the industry. So we really appreciate your time and joining us today for the show.
Thanks, fellas. It's a lot of fun. Good spending time with you.
You too.
Thanks, John.
Thanks for joining us. To go deeper or get access to some of the valuable nuggets from today's show, go to bankmarketingshow.com. There you'll find episodes, links to resources, and much more. Be sure to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, and join us next time.